Oh, so Michelle.
Oh my God. Yes, hi.
Yeah, mate, you know what?
What?
Think back a little over 3 years ago.
I know.
And we sort of wound up in the studio with the promise of 12 episodes of podcasting. Genius.
And we just could not get enough of each other.
We couldn't stop.
I know. And also a pandemic happened.
Yeah.
Like two wars happened.
See, well, there's that. There's a lot. Look, there is a whole shit that has gone, a load of stuff that has gone
down.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And to be perfectly honest, our good friend Salty Sea Dog sent me something recently.
Oh, what did he send?
He sent me a thing about the idea of OSINT burnout. Open source intelligent burnout. And the thing is, I read that and went, yeah, whatever. And then I kept reading it and went, oh my God, this is me.
Yes.
So I'm sorry to say that I've dismantled the blanket fort.
Have you?
I've dismantled the
blanket
fort.
Oh, that makes me
so sad. The blanket fort has gone down. And we're going to take a rather long hiatus because I've got to build a kitchen and find somewhere for my family to live. So this is it.
Yes.
I think it's time you saw other ex-spies, Michelle.
I think it's time we saw other podcasts.
Yeah, I think it's time we moved on to other podcasts.
We'll get into that, but what we're going to do is have a quick brief walk down memory lane
Walk down memory lane, but also let's have a look at what's going on and what could be happening in the next 6 to 12 months, because we're in what I'd like to call a rather large state of flux.
I know, and I like to leave our listeners like high and dry, basically.
I want the high and dry and desperate for me to come back.
Yes.
All right, okay, let's do this.
Done. You're listening to I Spy, the final countdown of Australian intelligence.
Na 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 na.
Da 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 da.
Na 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 na.
Na 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 na. Hello and welcome to I Spied. My name is Michelle Stevenson. I'm here with David Callan. And look, it has been over 3 years and we've gone through pandemics, as we said, and like a whole bunch of things.
Over 160 episodes.
166. And our listeners are the best. They actually listen to the full eps, which is always really nice. We check the data.
Yep.
We love our listeners. Yep. They're super engaged.
Yep.
But I think we need to kind of take a break.
We do need to take a break. You've got this burgeoning career in the media.
I do a lot. And I always say yes to everything.
Yep.
And there is a point where something has
You're
to give.
Such an improviser.
I know.
And also, as I said, I've got a house to build for a family and a few other bits and pieces that are going on.
And to be fair, I am going overseas for five years. No, I wish.
Badly I damaged
you. Yeah. I'm going overseas for 5 weeks. I've got a whole bunch of things coming up, which I just think now's the time to rest it. But it doesn't mean that you're going to be gone.
Oh, I'm coming back.
You're coming back.
Because as soon as I can rebuild the blanket fort, and I've already got a plan for the blanket fort.
Yes.
The architect and I have been spending quite a bit of time in it. It'll be in a bunker.
Yeah.
But I'm coming back. iSpied is not disappearing.
No.
iSpied is just going on a very long freaking holiday and relaxing.
We're just going to do a quick rebrand. Now, I do think what our listeners need to do, just make sure that you still like and subscribe to the podcast.
Yes, please
do. So then when it does come back, you will get that notification and David will be here in his blanket fort of fun.
And also on the artist formerly known as X, you can follow us at iSpied Podcast.
Yes.
I will still be monitoring that account. So please send us all you want. Now, look, before we go any further, some of the hits and misses we've had over the time, and also what we can expect. China. I've got to get the hand movement and the lips right.
China.
Right, so China has just had Xi Jinping has made one massive move in China recently. Mm. It's kind of freaking people out because he's basically changed Article 3 of the Organic Law, which is kind of like their constitution.
Yeah.
He's turned around and basically said the bureaucracy and the party are now one and the same.
Yes.
Right, so essentially he has gone from being a slightly democratically elected leader to full-blown authoritarian.
Yeah,
this is like China is now a lock. It is now the Communist Party.
Yeah.
And I think over the next few years, we're going to be seeing, like next few months and years, we're going to see them bristle.
Yes.
They do want to be the hegemonic power on the planet. They're certainly the hegemonic power in the East. They're on the rise. Their economy is looking really dodgy.
Mm.
And then you've got America.
Economy's looking very dodgy.
Yeah, very dodgy. And then you've got America and what's going on in the US. They seem to be the hegemonic power in decline.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, it was something with one of our very early guests, Neil Fergus, when we were talking about it, and the whole idea that all empires collapse.
Yes.
And, you know, we may be at that inflection point in history.
We're kind of at the precipice, and it'll be interesting to see how, because the world order has always been either the US or China.
Well, over the last 20 years.
Yes, of course.
And also now we've got, of course, we have Russia. Russia's a real problem because at the moment.
I mean, Russia is the problem child.
It's the problem child. And, well, interestingly enough, the reason I think Putin's focusing so much on Ukraine and Eastern Europe what would be his western border is he's kind of screwed in the east now. He's slowly becoming a vassal state to China.
Yeah.
China and North Korea are supplying a lot of their artillery. But then again, interestingly enough, I read somewhere Russia has now ramped up its artillery production to the point of like 3 to 1 to what the Ukraine can get their hands on. The Ukraine are running out of bullets, and it doesn't help that the US Congress is stymieing any chance of getting that stuff through.
Yeah.
Right. But that's because they do that thing with the Americans do this stupid thing where I'm going to put a bill in. Well, I'm going to attach another bill to that. So it's a spend. Well, basically, it's a spending bill on the wall.
Yeah.
But they've hooked in support for Ukraine into that, and the Republicans have just gone, we want to stop both.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a mess. The US is an absolute mess. Another thing to look at is AUKUS.
I know. The submarine stuff.
That lasted a while, didn't it?
I know. Look at the US. The US can't even keep up with their own supply, let alone help out with us.
Well, this is the interesting point. They were meant to make at least 2.8 submarines a year. They've now dropped that to something like 1.4 submarines per year, which barely services their own needs. It certainly won't service Australia's needs. And yet we've pumped $3 billion into their shipyards to try and keep them afloat. And yet we're not going to get anything out of it. And it's looking worse and worse. But don't panic, because Scott Morrison now joined the AUKUS group. Oh, well, that's another one that's going to go down the toilet.
So the problem I have with this whole AUKUS agreement, we've spent billions and billions of dollars and we're receiving nothing in response. There is not a single sub to be seen.
We still have the Collins class clunking away in the ocean. Actually, it's funny enough, when the Collins class sub first went into the water, they had their problems. Everything does. Every new battle platform will.
Yeah.
The thing is, you know, using anechoic chambers and padding and, you know, silencing, they managed to turn it into an absolutely brilliant submarine. Problem is, one, it's old, and two, we don't have enough sailors for it. This is the other really big issue we've got in Australia at the moment, is we are losing service personnel hand over fist because there's nothing there for them.
Yeah.
Right? We've got the F-35. So, you know, if you're one of, what, 30, 40 people that get a chance to fly one of those things, big ups for you. But the bottom line is our Navy, I mean, the recent report that came out about the Navy was scathing in how our surface fleet and our subsurface fleets are in parlous state, and we don't have sailors.
And I cannot help but think that the French are sitting back and having a good old-fashioned laugh.
Oh, yeah, Macron's there. He's got his brandy and his glass of wine going, yeah, could I tell you? What was it? I think Malcolm Turnbull actually came out recently and said something along the lines of, you know, we've been played for mugs.
Yes.
And it's
we knew that, though.
But, you know, this is the thing we've got. All of this money has been outlaid. All of this money's gone, but there is zero to show for it. And it doesn't seem like we're going to see anything. I mean, 2030, we're meant to get our first Virginia class submarine.
And I don't even think that's happening.
Very, very unlikely.
And
there
the
is
billions.
They put a kill switch in the AUKUS deal. The Americans put a kill switch in that said, basically, if anything degrades US undersea capabilities, we kill it. And they're already going, I mean, interestingly enough, we've put $3 billion, I think, into the shipyards in Norfolk, Virginia, the submarine construction yards over there. Interestingly enough, when the Pentagon put their budget paper in, they had the cut in production of Virginia-class submarines, but they had zero money budgeted to fix their shipyards. So it's like, hang on, we've given you $3 billion.
Where is it
going? Or is it just us that's paying for this? So we're kind of locked into this deal where we're spending a good deal of our own money to fix somebody else's problem. And I think this is one of the issues we're kind of getting stuck with at the moment in Australia, is we're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place.
But why couldn't we just build them?
Good question. Really good question.
Like, why couldn't we take that $3 billion and just go, I mean, Adelaide is ready to go, like.
Adelaide's ready to build, but we're not, we don't, we don't seem to have the designers. We don't have the people that are actually going to build them.
Surely in the same amount of time it would take the US to build a sub for us, we could train people up or hire them.
Yeah, well, there is that. I mean, we do have a dedicated shipyard, but again, Australia has this thing where we've just ramped down our manufacturing and it's a huge problem.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, interestingly enough, Adelaide, we build the Bushmasters, we build turrets for certain, not tanks, but for the APCs and those sort of things. We're, funnily enough, there are people that are very angry on X at the moment because Australia is building the bomb bay doors for the F-35, right? This is the other thing, is the F-35 isn't built in one spot.
No.
It's put together in one spot like Lego, but basically, the pieces come from all around the world.
Yeah.
So there's that sort of thing. I mean, the interesting thing is stuff like superconductors and the microchips we've got now, quantum computing. My wife actually came out of a meeting about quantum computing in finance and just went, my brain just exploded.
Mm.
These are the things that we should be focusing on, but we're just not.
Yeah.
Right? And the other problem with Australia is our labour costs are huge.
Yeah.
So,
because we have unions.
Yeah. Well, it's not just because we have unions. It's simply because
it's a huge part of it, though.
The huge, well, funnily enough, the union movement isn't that strong anymore. We don't have strong unions, but the big problem is we just don't have the bodies.
Well, yeah. It's always fascinating to me that we just don't have the bodies, but yet we do have unemployment. So.
But don't forget, you don't get any random Yahoo off the street to build a ship.
No. But like, I also am a big proponent of we need to start training people.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yes, like, we need to invest more in like what are the capabilities that are required for Australia to build Australia. Let's get those kind of up and running in TAFE. Let's get people into those.
Totally. I mean, that is one of the things that's probably good about this free TAFE policy is it gets people back into TAFE.
Yes.
And it stops people from like – one of my sons is studying filmmaking. The other son is studying fashion design. They're both very talented
guys. So they're going to be unemployed for a while.
Well, here's the thing. Interestingly enough, you know, the son studying filmmaking loves documentaries.
Yeah.
And all the first lecture they got is there's no money in documentaries. And it's like,
why are you teaching it though?
Why are we teaching it?
Yeah. But it's the same with journalism, right? They're like, they pump out so many journalists a year and there's like only so many jobs.
Yeah, there's only so many jobs. You know, they pump out so many actors every year and there are –
literally no jobs.
There are literally no jobs. I mean, Australia at the moment, the film industry is getting better. It's getting better because we're a production house.
Yeah.
We make films very well.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you watch.
We're cheaper as well than the US.
I mean, I've seen Dune about twice at the cinema.
Oh, how good is it?
Oh, it's so good.
I know, so good.
But yeah, so the trailer for Fall Guy with Ryan Gosling was on. And the interesting thing about it was everything was like, it's Australia, it's Australia, it's Australia.
Yeah.
Like, my wife turned around and went, it was made in Australia. And it's like, the Harbour Bridge is in almost every shot. The reason they made it here is because we make films like that really, really well. But the thing is, the stars aren't going to be Australian. The Australian actors are going to be doing the bit roles. Mm. So this is the thing. In Australia, we tend to import the really expensive kit and our money goes overseas where we should be making it here. We don't even make our own cars anymore.
I mean, we used to. I think the decline in the manufacturing sector has a lot to do with a lot of our issues.
Yeah.
And particularly when we saw with COVID and the pandemic, that's when, you know, that kind of reliance on other countries to supply our needs is where we, you know, it's kind of, it shows the problematic nature of globalization.
Yeah. Now, and that's a really good point. And this comes down to national security is when your supply chain is stretched that far and we live on an island.
Yeah.
So our supply chain is by geographic nature stretched anyway. Yep. We need to have a solid manufacturing base on the island itself, on our continent. And we're not doing that because it's cheaper to get China to build it.
Yeah, well, like they shut down the paper mill in Tasmania because it was cheaper to send the wood chips to Indonesia so they could make the paper and then they send it back to us.
Yeah.
And what we pay off them is still cheaper than if we had milled it here.
Now, you mentioned Indonesia.
Yes.
Now, this is a place we never got to in the several years we've been.
Well, we've kind of
touched on it.
Yeah, we have.
But the interesting thing is, like, the whole Witness K thing in Timor, the interesting thing is the new president, Prabowo, he's got quite a dark history. He was the former Kapasis commander, allegedly involved in atrocities in Timor and Irian Jaya. He's now the Indonesian president. At one point, he was banned from the United States and Australia because of war crimes accusations. Now, but here's the thing, and it goes back to our episode about finessing information. The whole thing is basically a lot of people are saying the two things that helped him was one, he had Suharto's son, I think, as his vice president. But the other thing is he kept pumping out videos on TikTok of him playing with puppies and dancing with his granddaughter. And that was meant to basically – a lot of people are saying that just those little touches were enough to soften him for the population. Now, a different thing is – our perception of Prabowo in the West, because basically we are still the West even though we live in the East. The Western democracy, the attitude towards Prabowo was he was a war criminal.
Yeah.
that doesn't mean he was regarded as that in Indonesia, because again, control of information in your local area can certainly change it. Now, the fact that he went on TikTok and danced with a puppy and his granddaughter, look at me, I'm just a cuddly old granddad, really, really interesting example of this, you know, this idea of using misinformation, disinformation, and basically, you know,
changing
the narrative to suit your needs.
Yeah. Now, like, so he's using the I'm a cuddly grandfather to his advantage, and Biden can't get away from being accused of a grandfather.
Yeah. Now, I mean, that was interesting. I don't know if you watched the State of the Union. It was like, funnily enough, it was when Trump turned around.
I work in news. You do know that. Yeah, right? Okay, yeah. Sorry. It's like when I come home from work and my husband's like, so did you hear about? I'm like, yes. Yep. Right across it.
Funnily enough, I say that to my wife. Did you hear? No. No, really, I don't want to know.
Oh, no, sometimes I'm the worst too. I'm like, oh, my God, you got to, like, this story. And then this, he goes, I don't want to hear that. That sounds terrible. I'm like, yeah, it's terrible, but you got to hear it.
Yeah, it's terrible. And my wife basically turns around and goes, David, you're getting strident. Yeah. You're getting strident. Right? I mean, and my poor wife is now going to have to suffer me going, I've got to tell you something. This is the thing that's going on at the moment. We are in a massive state of flux on the planet, right? We've got Gaza, which is a freaking disaster at the moment. It is so bad. What's going on in there? And again, the narrative is being manipulated by actors with an agenda. Mm. So, I mean, a lot of the stuff coming out of there, the fact that food drops are being attacked, Israel will no doubt be saying, but, you know, we know there were Hamas people amongst it. Mm. It's like, yeah, but guys, you can't use a shotgun to perform surgery.
Yeah.
And this is the problem, is it's like literally they're going, they are literally carpet bombing this place. They're going to just clean it out.
Yeah, they are.
But the problem we have at the moment is, you know, Ukraine is happening and everyone's like, oh, that's terrible. Israel's happening and everyone's going, we don't want to upset the apple cart. So this is the problem we've got at the moment, is there's a lot of sort of double dealing in what's going on.
What do you think happened? So just yesterday as we're recording this app, the news came out that the Australian government quickly cancelled visas for some Palestinians. They were stopped at the airport and told that they were no longer allowed to come.
Yeah, well, the whole thing was the adults weren't allowed to come, but sure, send your kids. I think that was the story. Yeah. I saw that.
So there's this real fear of the threat of terrorism?
Yeah. This is a really interesting point. It goes back to Burjo and the ASIO annual threat assessment. They've put it down as possible. Yes. Terrorism is now possible. And, I mean, the problem is we have a lot of this rhetoric coming out that, oh, you're importing terrorism when you import these people. You know what? It's funny. During the Gulf War, ASIO had a dedicated campaign.
Yeah.
And this is the first Gulf War. This is Gulf War I, when Saddam Hussein got up and said, I issue a fatwa. This is a jihad, the mother of all battles, right? Now, ASIO did something really, really smart. They turned around and went, interview everyone. Go and knock on everyone's door in Lakemba and Tempe and anywhere in Arncliffe, all around the mosques, wherever we know there is a diaspora, you know, population of Muslims.
Yep.
Let's go and talk to them.
Yeah.
And it's not like we're watching you and you – it was like, guys, we just want to know that it's cool.
Yeah.
And the thing is, there was a lot of knocking on the door. And now in Islam, if you invite someone to your house, they are your guest and it is your job to look after them. Like basically the case officers going out doing these interviews, they put on so much weight.
Yeah.
Because they'd walk in and a feast would be presented and they'd get through that feast and then in an hour's time they were knocking on another door and it was another feast.
I mean, I got to say, I wouldn't say no to that gig.
No, and look, when I was in Qatar, I remember getting invited over to someone's house and the food was just magnificent, right?
Yeah, I was in Saudi Arabia when my parents were living there and I got invited to perform for one of the princes at the end of Ramadan, so the Ramadan feast. So we went out to the palace at midnight and the amount of food that was there was incredible.
But, you know, my wife and I are actually heading out to Lakemba for the Ramadan feast next week. We're just like, got to go. This sounds great. But the whole thing is, it's like we were inviting in and every time we said, look, we know that Saddam Hussein is called for a fatwa. Mm. And they would have, like, very often they'd have a photo of Saddam and the flag on the wall, you know, the Iraqi flag and all that. And the whole thing was that they go, we understand you're still quite dedicated and passionate as an Iraqi citizen. And then they would point to the photo of Saddam Hussein and go, that's why we're here.
Yeah.
Because of this guy. We moved here to get away from that. Mm. And it's like, why do you have it on the wall? Because if we don't, we're going to have problems in our community.
Yeah.
Now, and that's when we started identifying, well, hang on, who's going to give you jip for not having the photo on the wall? Well, you may want to talk to him down the road. So funnily enough, there was only one instance of somebody that went, okay, it's a fatwa, I'm on, yeah. I'm going to do it. And he rang the embassy in Canberra and went, I've got a boot full of guns and I'm coming to start the fight. Yeah. And the embassy were like going, no, dude, stay away. He was picked up by the AFP on Yarra Glen in Canberra, arrested, you know, for organising a terrorist,
yeah.
an attempted terrorist attack. But the whole thing is, this is being badly handled. It's being ham-fistedly handled. Unfortunately, we're pulling people, if they're pulling people out of Gaza, what's our checks and balances as they come through the border?
Yeah, and now, I think that is part of the issue, and that is the fear as well. And it's a really valid kind of fear.
It's a valid fear, but I also think
that— because Hamas is a terrorist organisation, and let's be clear, there were a lot of Hamas supporters living in Palestine.
Definitely. But the whole thing I think you'll find is if you're a Hamas supporter, you're not going to be coming to Australia because the fight's right there. If you want to, if you want to go out and kill Israeli soldiers, you don't have to come to Australia to do it.
Yeah.
Now, understood, in the intelligence world, sending someone into a foreign location to conduct an atrocity is not unheard of. When I read that, my first thought was like, okay, is it April Fool's yet? You know, I literally went, is it April 1st? Because that just sounds sheer bloody-minded and stupid and badly handled.
Oh, incredibly badly handled. I also want to tap into TikTok, but I think we need to take a break and then we'll come back and we'll talk TikTok.
Our last commercial break.
Oh. Okay, welcome back. So TikTok, something happened this week as well where, you know, US Congress is kind of all but signed off on banning TikTok unless the Chinese company divests.
Yeah.
So they need to kind of divest into having American holdings, an American company. Now, you know, the opposition in Australia here has said we need to follow suit. The, you know, there are real threats with the app and the PM has said, no, we will not be doing that.
But can I be perfectly honest with you? Mm. Good luck. How do you stop it?
Well, you geo-block it.
You geo-block it. Yeah, you can do that. But you know what? That's what virtual private networks are for.
I mean, if you're in China, you can't access many of the, like Google or anything.
I totally get that. But that then plays into the whole idea of the authoritarian state. All right, this is the really
but I do think we have a real issue with TikTok. It is one of the ways that disinformation and misinformation can be easily put out and into young minds.
Oh, gotcha.
It's one way that China could potentially control the narrative and the algorithm could skew to the way that they think will help them.
Yeah. A little bit, again, as we found with pretty much every social media platform, is that, I mean, they were using, I think Russia was using Facebook during Brexit, right? So, you know, this is the problem. We've created an ecology where this is allowed to flourish.
Yeah.
Right. And this is the problem. We can ban TikTok. I can guarantee you within 15 minutes, there'll be another platform up that will do exactly the same thing.
No, I think it doesn't matter what the platform's doing, it matters who is in control of the platform.
Well, totally. I agree. But that's why they brought Mark Zuckerberg and sat him in Congress.
Yes. And he got annihilated.
And, I mean, the interesting thing is you look at what Elon Musk is doing with X as well. I mean, that's become a dumpster fire.
Yeah, but to be honest, a lot of people have fled it.
Yeah, exactly.
The site is, you know, basically just an echo chamber for the crazy.
Yep. Now, the whole thing with TikTok is, again, it's a Chinese app. I mean, interestingly enough, I did like the CEO of TikTok when he's been questioned by one of the Republican congressmen. And the guy said, are you a member of the Chinese Communist Party? He went, I'm Singaporean. Have you ever fought, you've been a member of the PLA? I'm Singaporean. Mm. It was like, dude, I live in Singapore. I was born in Singapore. I work in Singapore. I'm Singaporean. I work for this company. Right. Now, does that make him a dishonest or untrustworthy actor? Who knows, right? This is the thing we're finding now is the way China and the way intelligence in general is targeting, it's not just I want to look at a general, I want to look at a politician. Mm. They're targeting everyone. Now, a social media site that has that much influence is always going to be of interest to an intelligence organization and it's always going to be of interest to government because they control the narrative, not the government. And this is the problem we have is once we start banning things, where do you stop banning things?
Well, the thing is, they're not banning the company. They're just saying you have to divest it.
Yeah.
So it's not. They're not saying we don't want TikTok. We're just worried who is controlling.
Who's controlling it? Yeah,
TikTok,
yeah, yeah.
Which now, is a fair conversation to have.
Fair conversation to have, but the problem is the whole thing is divest or we will.
Yes, but I don't have a problem with that. And I think that we should also think about it because I do think it is a dangerous platform. It is spreading false narratives and this is where the most youth get their news from.
True. I agree with that. But then again, I mean, the argument could be made that there are false narratives being spread across multiple media sites and styles.
But like YouTube got held to account over their algorithm and they had to change and make some changes.
And the other thing, bottom line is, it's like how much money is TikTok pumping into the lobbyists industry to then pump forward through and into Congress and senatorial pockets?
I just think it's a very valid conversation. I think it's also one that Australia should be looking at as well.
Yeah. Now,
because Australia is isolated.
We are isolated. And funnily enough, again, back in Australia, friendly Geordies tried to break into Pine Gap.
Mm.
Now, funnily enough, we were talking about Pine Gap at the end of the last year. We brought that up and we talked about everything. And funnily enough, now I'm seeing a lot of people talking about Pine Gap. Here's the thing. As we said in our Pine Gap episode, it's a fait accompli, guys. We've signed a treaty. The thing is there. I mean, everyone's getting up in arms.
What are people getting up in arms about?
They're getting up in arms about Pine Gap being used as the satellite relay station. So US target or Israeli targeting in Gaza is coming out of Pine Gap. If Israeli targeting is coming out of Pine Gap, it's actually a US satellite up there. Bottom line is, it's like us turning around to a tenant and saying, you can't have a television in your room. It's that weird sort of thing where we've given the Americans permission to use Pine Gap as a satellite relay station. The only thing we can do now is turn around and say, right, shut the whole thing down.
I also find it always interesting when people and media involved, but when people decide that they're against a war for whatever reason.
Yeah.
When there are a lot of other things that go on in the world that are also just as bad and no one really rallies behind, no one really supports. I do feel like sometimes we have a double standard what we choose to say is bad.
Oh my God. Yes. Hello. Go and look at West Africa.
Yes, that's what I was about to say. I was actually going to bring it up.
Freaking basket.
Yes, and like the massacres that are going on there are just unfathomable, like far worse than what has been going on in Palestine.
That's the thing. But I mean, Palestine is the focal point because Palestine, Israel.
But I also think people do have an issue with the Jewish population.
Yes.
It does come across as anti-Semitic in some regards. Because I wonder if it wasn't Israel and Palestine, just say it was like Iraq and Iran or whatever, would people be – I don't think people would be this involved.
No.
But yes.
Now, the thing about Israel is one
– people just love to hate Israel.
Well, they've –
That's kind of my point.
They've been, people have loved to hate Israel since
for a very long time.
I mean, since Christ. I mean, they literally, the whole thing was they killed Christ. That was one of the reasons Hitler used for the final solution is they were the killers of Christ. Come on.
Because Hitler's someone we should all trust.
Yes, I know what I'm talking about. Look at the painting I did. It's terrible, Adolf. Yeah. Right, death to everyone. Right. The whole thing is, it's like there is a terrible historical vilification of the Jewish religion.
I agree.
Right? And it's dated back for millennia. The problem we have at the moment, I think, with Israel is we have a rather extreme right-wing government in that Netanyahu, to be able to form his coalition, had to appeal to the worst sort of excesses of right wing.
Oh, yeah. He's not a perfect leader, but also no leaders are.
No leaders. There is no such thing as,
I mean, have you met the Saudi king?
No.
No, but like we all know that that is not a man that we want to be fucking with.
The Crown Prince.
Oh, sorry, the Crown Prince.
Yes.
I mean the Saudi Crown Prince. We all know that that is a man we do not want to fuck with.
No. Or, you know, you will be finding yourself being introduced intimately to a bone saw.
Yes, but yet, you know, our leaders kowtow and shake hands and, you know, play nice.
That's what we call the game of diplomacy and the game of state. This is again why intelligence is such an important part of the game. In that, we're all kowtowing to MBS and there's not a lot we can do about it. You know, Trump is a real issue because the thing about Trump is unless they put him in a prison cell, unless they get one of these cases up, and that's why he's trying to run the clock out as much as he possibly can, using the Supremes and using the judges that he's put in position, right? He's doing everything he can because once if he becomes president, he can just wipe it all away, except for the state stuff. And even then, he'll have a way of getting out of that as well. So the whole thing is like, personally, I think Trump's a huge threat to global stability simply because he's not in it for anyone but himself, right? He's just doing-
But to be honest, let's be honest, like all leaders are narcissists. He's just a bit more flagrant about it.
Yeah, but I mean, it comes down to that beautiful thing that Douglas Adams said, that anyone who has the ability to put themselves into a position of power shouldn't be trusted because of the personality they need to get themselves into the position
100%,
of power.
100%.
And the ultimate leader is a, you know, totally benign dictator. There's no such thing. You can't have it.
No.
I mean, the problem really stems to the fact that to survive as a species, humans are innately competitive. Yep. And because we're innately competitive, we want to win. And because we want to win, we will go all out to – there are people that will go all out to do it. There is a lack of the ability to take a loss. It's one of the things I was discussing it, and I talk about it with the students that I work with a lot, is where, you know, failure is not an option.
Yeah.
Failure is inevitable.
Yeah.
Right? You cannot go through life without failure. But if we keep gearing ourselves up to never fail – we'll never be able to deal with it.
Yeah.
But, you know, now we're kind of getting off because I want to finish on this.
Okay. And then I want to say, well, I want to ask you what your favorite, if you can think about your favorite app has been.
Sure. Right. Okay. But I just want to do this because comes down to what came out last week with the national threat assessment, or the week before the national threat assessment, is Zhu Qiuhua.
Okay.
Who owns the double owned? She used to own the Double Drummer Cafe in Canberra.
Mm.
The Double Drummer Cafe in Canberra is a little cafe, very popular.
Okay.
Because right next door is the Office of National Assessment.
Okay.
The Office of National Intelligence Cyber Division, the Inspector General of Intelligence Security, ASIS, the AFP, and Prime Minister and Cabinet. All in the neighbourhood.
Right.
The interesting thing about Zhu, the former owner of the establishment, she was married to a guy by the name of Jin Zheng Jiang, who is a PRC politician and former head of the United Workfront.
Oh, interesting that she just decided to open a cafe there.
Open a cafe where it is known that all of these different organisations
have coffee.
Right? Now, this was sent to us by our dear old friend, and again, thank you for all of your support and all of your hints and everything. Salty Sea Dog sent us this. Now, the thing is, he just went, because no one ever talks about intelligence over coffee. Just to let you know how it used to work in Asia, if you want to have a chat about something with someone, we had a courtyard in the middle of the building. It was called the smoker's courtyard.
Right.
Because by the time they realized you weren't allowed to smoke in the building, you know, we were all standing out the front with a building with Asia written on the front of it. So they opened a courtyard. Yeah, yeah. And connected to that courtyard was a canteen where you could buy coffee and your lunch and everything, and a bar.
Yep.
Right?
Now, so all conversations over drinks could happen.
All conversations over drinks could happen over drinks on a Thursday night, could happen over lunch.
I mean, it makes sense.
Right. Now, the interesting thing was I remember the head of counter-espionage and the head of counter-terrorism used to meet in the courtyard and then walk pace up and down the back wall of the courtyard with cigarettes, smoking, and we'd all stand in the windows above watching going, can anyone lip read? What are they talking about? Personally, I think they're going, did you see the footy on the weekend? Oh, yeah, they were great.
Yeah.
But the whole thing is, this is the really interesting point, was a lot of people would go, oh, it happened in a cafe. What's so bad about that? I had a meeting recently with some of my old friends from the organization and it was in a hotel foyer. It was an unrelated thing. It was just something they were asking me about someone I knew. Now, the whole thing was, I remember walking in there and thinking, okay, how am I going to mess with these guys? Because I walked in an hour before and scoped the joint out and went, they want that table. I know why, because it's private. Yep. They've got the hot, and I went, I'm going to sit in the middle of the cafe and make them come to me.
Yeah.
And they literally walked up and went, you know, back corner, let's go. Now, the funny thing was every time we started talking about stuff, you may not know this, but I can be quite loud.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
You're so shy and demure.
And the number of times I go, oh, well, you know what we should do? And it's like you'd see them both flinch and look around. And it was like, oh, yeah, you're in public. It's very easy to forget that people around you can hear.
I know. I mean, I know this because where I live in Bondi, I have to be really careful about what I say about media because everyone's in media.
Everyone's in the media in Bondi.
And you're like, the last thing you need is the table next to you hearing you bitch about
something. Honest to God, if you wanted to wipe out the media in Australia, literally, just carpet bomb Bondi and you've pretty much taken out every journalist. Yeah, pretty much.
And all the English.
All the English and also pretty much every filmmaker as well. So look, that to me was just a really interesting point. It goes back to what Mike Burgess was saying, watch your P's and Q's, keep an eye out, and for God's sake, don't tell everyone you've got a frigging security clearance and you're working on the Orca submarines on LinkedIn.
Exactly.
Right.
Okay, so what would be your favourite ep? I mean, it's hard to, like, 3 years is a very long time.
It's a long time.
And we barely took any breaks.
No. And again, that's another reason why we've got to take this hiatus. We're kind of burnt out. And like the amount of time I was spending on it just going, oh.
I know.
And I'd like to sort of like get a bit of a back catalogue of travesties and controversies that I can talk about later on. I really enjoyed the very first ones because one, we were feeling each other out and two, they were the classic old ASIO stories.
Yeah, I like the classic ASIO stories because they were quite funny and they were quite interesting. And it's funny when you listen to them back, we sound so green.
We sound so nice and also so very, and let's get it right. Right. And now it's like, whatever, who cares?
The other
thing I really liked, I did love the one about Marshall, the Skripov affair.
Yes.
Because that's one of the classic ASIO stories and it's also a great example of how real tradecraft and real spying works.
Yeah.
And I always enjoyed that. I loved our guests. Like Mark Polymeropoulos was great. Ferg was always fantastic to have in.
So I would say Jack Beaumont was like probably my favourite.
I still have people coming up going, so is he really that handsome? It's like, yeah, he really is.
Yeah, yeah. And it was funny because my girlfriend who listened to the app then decided to listen to the audiobooks and was like, oh my God, the book's so good. The book's so good.
Oh, so
and,
good.
And then she's like, I'm like, yeah, it's pretty much mostly real. Like it's based on, she goes, what? Like, it's crazy. And I'm like, yeah, I know. It's crazy. So I think Jack Beaumont, but also, you know, I really love the ep where you talk about following the Russian through the city of Sydney.
Look, funnily enough, I got called into another podcast to do a walkthrough of what happened. So we walked down Oxford Street and I was like, oh, this was the pub where that happened. And it's like, we finally get to the bottom of get to the bottom of Liverpool Street. It's like, so where's the pornographic cinema? It's like,
It doesn't exist anymore.
No. I think it's that church over there. The funny thing about it is those old stories resonated for me. I loved those episodes because it was a chance for me to tell an old story again and again. I did enjoy trying to work out who James Bond was based on.
Oh, yes.
That was one of my favourite things was because I always thought it was Fleming supposedly based it on a guy he met in the West Indies who had naked women in his room and kept sending plans for Kirby vacuum cleaners but changing the scale. So instead of it being inches, it was feet. And they were like the Kirby vacuum cleaner was a device the Russians were building to scoop up all the gold on the surface of the on the ocean floor. Right. I always thought it was that. But when it turns out that there was a myriad of people, particularly women. And that was the other thing I really loved was all of those episodes we did about women in intelligence. Because here's the thing, that great story that Mike Burgess told in the threat assessment about the women behind the Petrov defection, that was unknown.
Yeah.
And that just goes again to show that, you know, we really, God, it really frustrates me. I've always said the best bosses I've ever worked with are women.
Yeah, we're great. We should be running the country. I'm not going to lie.
You should be running the freaking planet.
Yeah.
Right? I really do believe that because, again, boys are full of testosterone and just want to fight and win.
Wow, don't I know it.
Yeah, I've got two at the moment. Boy, do their rooms stink.
Yeah, I live with two.
Yeah.
Yes, no, so I will have to say one of the worst moments – Russian dentistry.
Oh, yeah. But it's really easy. You just get a file and start
Let's
growing.
Let's not do it now, please. That was the worst. Okay. So anyway, bottom line, we have loved working together.
Yeah.
This has been 3 years of ups, downs, pandemics, fun,
Weird stories.
But also a lot, and it's been exciting. And I think what we've discovered, I mean, it started out as just a series that just kept going on and on and on. And we could go on forever, but yep. I think it's time just to park it. I think you need to have a break.
I need to have a break.
And then you need to come back on your own with more, because I think our listeners are keen for more.
As I said, I will be rebuilding the blanket fort.
Yes.
I'm ready to go. Now,
yes.
Thank you, time. We've got to say thanks to Anthony, Zan, and Sam, everybody at Dimitina Media, because they've been absolutely
brilliant.
Their
support has been amazing.
Tom Bourne in South America.
Oh.
He was our South American connection.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Martin Murray, Sim, Matt Fitz, Loop Disconnect.
Okay.
A Loop Disconnect, who has all of those fantastic old East German spying machines. I really want to thank Minerva.
Yes.
Because Minerva, you kept us honest and we really appreciate that.
Yeah, we do appreciate that.
And of course, you.
Oh.
Oh, and Salty.
No, I was going to say Salty.
Salty, I forgot. Yeah, Salty.
Can't forget the sea dog.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Salty, you and I are going to have a beer and we'll talk all about it. But you, Michelle, thank you so very much for joining me, for like holding my hand and leading me into this crazy world of podcasting.
And I want to thank you because it has been a lot of fun. And I do come out of these sessions like
frustrated, sweaty,
exhausted.
And
exhausted, tired. No, I have sincerely enjoyed our time. But I do think it's time for you, for me to let go and for you to ride the bike without the training wheels.
You go, David.
You actually don't need me.
Okay, I'll try it on my own. All right, well, we'll see you all in a couple of months.